T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
One of 7 Bruins who spent time with the U.S. National Team Development Program. Now a break here. Zadina, right in the goal. He scores!
Paul closes. Pasternak scores! Paul Schoen passed to Bergeron. He changed the geometry and opened the seam for Pasternak's bullet.
Red Wings control. 6 skaters for Detroit. Domestikov a shot. Close to the goal. They score!
Oh, the sounds of last night where the Boston Bruins found a way to lose another one, this time 2-1 to the Detroit Red Wing. It is 12:02, Gresham Kiefer with you, WEEI Sports Radio Network, WEEI.com. And, hey, if you have a young sports radio listener in your life, or an old one too, make sure you can know that you can listen anytime, anywhere on the Odyssey app. You can also watch us do this show, WEEI.com/watch. I am down at Gillette Stadium, high school state championship games today. Been commissioned to do the color commentary on those, which will be a ton of fun. And it'll be better than watching the Bruins last night, Keith, who get to 1-1 third period. Okay, here we go. They're battling. Their coach has got COVID. Brad Marchand suspended. Jake DeBrusque wants a trade. Tuukka Rask is lurking. And late in the game, lose 2-1.
Yeah, a lot kind of going against them there. They still outshot Detroit 42-16 and found a way to lose that one. The Detroit goalie, young guy, played his ass off. He was really good, but frustrating as hell. And you're right, you don't have the head coach. You don't have really your best player, and you don't have him for a 3-game stretch, and you can't score more than a goal, and it's just really frustrating. So Taylor Hall, he bops up to the top line. He's on the top power play. David Pastrnak does get a power play goal. That's sort of one thing we've been looking for, is for his goal total. What is he up to, 8-9, I think, on the season now? I think it is 9. Last night might have been 9. So that's going up a little bit. The power play going up a little bit. But still, this is one of those teams that I know they've played more games, but they're ahead of you in the standings. You get an opportunity to grab a couple of points at home, and you can't get it done. And it's just really, really frustrating. And then I think kind of looming over all that is both, all right, is Jake DeBrusque going to get traded? He's already asked to be traded. And we always hear about how good the locker room is and how all these guys want to be here. And, like, that's one of the things that's really strong, like a strength of this team. And one of the guys who's been on the team for now 5 years, he wants out. And he's asking for a trade. And so you're like, yeah, on the one hand, you kind of want to trade him. I don't know what you'd get for him. And then also, because the Providence Bruins have a COVID outbreak, Marchand's suspended for 3 games, and because some of the injuries you have, you don't have a ton of roster flexibility right now. So unless you traded DeBrusque for a player who you can immediately put in there, if you traded him right now for a pick, you might be like undermanned until Marchand gets back.
So is this just a convergence of a whole bunch of stuff going wrong at the same point in time? Or is this an indicator that the Bruins are just a hot mess right now?
See, they've been like going back and forth, win-loss now for over a week, right? So they're a team to me that's sort of a middle-of-the-pack type of squad. Like probably a playoff team, I guess, if you want to start even to look at that as we hit December. But they're not great, and you got 3 teams in the division that are definitely better than them, at least right now. And you're like, all right, what's gonna change about that? And I do think it's an excuse, but the fact that they've already had 2 week-long breaks and they haven't even played their 20th game yet is stupid. And, like, that's not really fair. It's hard to get any footing going. And then you're like, all right, now you have a bunch of games in a row. and let's take your best player off the ice for three games. Well, he took himself off the ice. Whether or not it should have been three games, two games, one game is more of the debate. But he's out, so now you got to kind of jumble up the lines again. You got to deal with this one player who wants a trade demand. And, oh, by the way, your head coach isn't there, and I'm not sure when he's going to be back on the bench either.
Yeah, I know Brad Marchand defended himself, I do believe, after the morning skate yesterday, I think it was.
Yeah.
Or I know there were quotes out there where he was like, listen, if that guy, you know, if basically saying that if someone gets triggered based off of something that he did, which he didn't think was that big a deal, then, you know, how soft has the league gotten kind of thing.
Well, he also is like, hey, I've changed. I'm not that guy anymore. And he admitted, like, I've crossed the line before, but over the last 4 years, I've been on, like, my best behavior, basically, is what he's saying. But I don't know. That's tough. Like, if Ndamukong Suh did something kind of borderline in a game,
yeah,
do you think they're going to be like, oh, well, you've been pretty good? Or they're like, no, no, no. We remember you stomping on guys and remember all this other nonsense. So they're going to throw the book at you. So I'm not surprised. I think if any other player did what Marchand did, it probably would be a game. But it's him. Too bad. It's your sixth suspension. So you can be a great goal scorer. You can be Team Canada. You can be all this stuff. Unfortunately, people are going to keep their first memory of you is not going to go anywhere.
No, I agree, and I don't think the league is ever going to cut a guy like Brad Marchand a break.
No.
And I wasn't arguing that they should necessarily, but it was just interesting that Marshy went to the, well, everything's getting soft sort of argument to be able to try to defend himself. I mean, look, it's clear he did it. It was a mistake. Take your medicine. Come back like a house of fire. Like, that's the one hope that, at least for me, Keith, that I have for Marchand is that he's sitting there and he's stewing and he's pissed. And then, you know, 3 games from now, Woody Woodpecker shows up in that uniform and is out there instigating and being a pain in the ass.
Well, and what's great, too, is he had all those comments about Canada and about how players don't want to play in Canada because of the fans. His first 3 games back at Vancouver, at Edmonton, at Calgary.
Oh, that'll be fun.
It's perfect. It's perfect. So they'll be all over him. The media will be all over him. The fans will be all over him. But that'll be good. I think he probably thrives off of that. It is a tough 3-game stretch for him to miss. So you just lose to Detroit. You have Nashville tomorrow. Pretty good team. And then you're home to Tampa Bay on Saturday. A really good team. So those are not 3 ideal games to not have your best player. But we'll see what they do. And who knows when Cassidy's going to be back either.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that Bruce Cassidy's in the COVID protocol. We don't really know when he is going to be back. Joe Sacco is basically the interim head coach, I guess you would say, right now.
Yeah.
Because Cassidy can't be around the team. I had someone who texted me, why is Joe Sakic coaching the Bruins? I'm like, no, no, no. Wrong guy.
That'd be cool.
Wrong,
yeah.
Right. That actually would be kind of cool, believe it or not. You had mentioned the guy who wanted traded and wanted out, and that'd be Jake DeBrusk. And I know at some point the conversation is going to be, okay, is this a distraction? Now, I don't think Jake DeBrusk is good enough that other people in the Bruins or locker room are looking around and being like, oh my God, I can't believe this guy is still here. And after last night's loss, Taylor Hall talked about DeBrusk, the conundrum of having a guy in the room that you know wants out.
He talked to us this morning. He just said, I love you guys. This is something in my career that, you know, I'm at a crossroads and he's going to have to do, but he's not a distraction at all. It's almost better that it's out there. You know, you have a day to kind of digest that. And Jake's a great kid. He's got a lot of skill and he's going to have a good career in this league. And as a group, as an organization, I think you deal with those distractions head on and you just go play the game. And, you know, that's the culture. That's the model that we have. And whoever's in, you got to play well. And that's what we said this morning. We expect Jake to play as well as he can, even under the circumstances.
It is kind of funny, though. He kind of contradicts himself a little bit where he says it's not a distraction. And then later on in the answer, he says we have to deal with these distractions head on. So, like, all right, buddy, it sounds like it is a distraction. I'm with you, though. Like, I did view this similar to in the preseason, N'Keal Harry demanding a trade with the Patriots, where the other guys on the team are just like, whatever, dude. Like, you're a non-factor. You're not good enough on our team to really help or hurt us to that degree. Like, and if you're playing, fine. Like, you're a teammate. We're like, okay, good. We understand it's a business. Maybe you would be better somewhere else. It's not like David Pastrnak demanded a trade where you'd be like, oh, crap. The best young player wants out. Oh, now what do we do? Or there might be some of the screw him. Like, he's getting all the ice time and shots he wants here and he wants somewhere else. not the case. Or like on the Patriots, if somebody much, much, much better than N'Keal Harry wanted a trade, you're like, oh, here we go. And that's why you see it in the NBA when it happens, or even in the NFL when it started to bleed in a little bit. It's like, oh, crap, we better trade Jalen Ramsey quick before it turns into something, or James Harden before it turns into something. N'Keal Harry and Jake DeBrusk can still play or not play, and the rest of the team I don't think is going to be greatly impacted by it.
Yeah, the profile of the player, just on principle, it's more of the, oh, Jake's gone. Hey, buddy, good luck to you. Yeah. See you later. What do we get in return?
Right. Did we get a player? Do we get somebody else that we can mix into the locker room, or are we just getting a pick? And at that point, it's like it really doesn't matter. Like,
I'm really resigning myself to the fact that whatever they get for Jake DeBrusk, it's probably going to be disappointing.
I think it's going to be, conditional sixth-round pick or something insane. I bet it'll be a conditional pick because I believe he is a restricted free agent, and so you can always do the, hey, if you re-sign him, we get a round higher, or whatever the nonsense
is.
Yeah,
one of those deals. And, of course, we're also sitting here, and we're kind of doing the Taylor Hall, right? It's the, well, it's not a distraction, but we deal with these distractions. Well, boy, Jake DeBrusk sucks. But boy, if we can get a second-round pick for him, it would be great.
No, I think we're all resigned to the fact that it won't be a second-round pick. No. It won't be anywhere near that. But I also think, like, it's not nothing. Like, it's one of the lead stories with the Bruins. He was booed at the Garden last night.
How about that?
Like, that's something like, hey, you don't want to be here? All right, buddy, take a hike. But I really think timing-wise, they probably have to wait just with bodies, like who's available, till after March. So the last game Marshawn suspended is Saturday. Don't you think Sunday he might be traded?
Yeah, maybe. It sounded like, in listening to the comments from Don Sweeney yesterday, when he kept mentioning hockey trade and that we've known this for a while.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that they've laid some groundwork to hopefully something gets done. But, Rich, I wonder if it's too early in the year yet. Like, do enough teams have need? Because who's going to look at Jake DeBrusk and go, oh, I want that guy. I got to go get him. He's going to change my roster. But maybe in 10 games, injury situations force a team to go out and make a move.
Yeah, that would probably be it. It would be injury. Or I'm sure there are some teams, especially some of those bottom teams, that are like, you know what? This guy's only 25 years old. I'll take a stab at it.
Take a flyer type.
Right. Like, there are some bad rosters in the league that you say, well, yeah, he might not be playing much for Boston, but they've been a playoff team the last several years, so we'll take a shot. We're not going to give you much, but we can make room on the roster for him.
Tommy Curran will join us to talk football in just a little over 15 minutes from now at 12:30. Don't forget, Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network joins us tomorrow at 10:45. Make sure you make the appointment for not only Tommy, but also Rap Sheet as well. It is the first ever split squad edition of Gresh and Keefe. I'm down at Gillette Stadium, high school football. Next 2 days down here, I'll be a part of that. Keefe is back at the studios in Brighton. And, you know, are the flags at WEEI, Keefe, going half mast tomorrow once Major League Baseball decides to get the giant chain out and the big old lock, right? And they lock the players out from all the facilities, because at 11:59 tonight, the lockout between baseball and the players begins. Oh boy.
It is such a slap in the face, I think, for not all fan bases, because let's face it, you know, we were talking to Bradford before. You know, if you're a Marlins fan or a Pirates fan, first of all, there's not many of you, and it's like, whatever. Next year is going to be a lost season anyway.
My Aunt Liam is the only Pirate fan I remember now.
And I think for the Red Sox fan, it sucks, because 2020 was such a lost season, and it was just like, whatever, it was less games, you couldn't go to Fenway, and it was a dump. And then they come back this year, and people are into it. They really were. It was a great run. It was a surprising run. And how do you follow that up? All right, you got another year, another offseason with Heim Bloom. What is he going to do so far? Nothing. But you're still curious as to how are they going to build this team? How are they going to get better going forward? How are they going to compete with the Yankees and the Rays and the Blue Jays and all this? And, oh, there may not be a season. It's like, ugh, just it is classic baseball, because it felt like you did get some good momentum last year. And again, don't compare it to football. Compare it to, you know, other sports or other things that are on TV. We did remember at the All-Star break, we were talking about the fact that you had Shohei Ohtani, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Fernando Tatis Jr. all playing so well. You had one guy going for the Triple Crown. You had one guy going for like a 40-40. You had one guy who was a pitcher hitter. Like, it was so, and they're all young, and it was great for baseball. And now you might follow that up with no season. Like, just sucks.
Do you think there's a real chance that we have no season?
Yeah.
Because I'm not there yet.
Definitely. I thought we might not have a season in 2020. So I guess you could say, well, they figured that out. But it was always sort of, it felt like, all right, they got that done, but it's going to be real issues when the CBA is up.
Yeah, I feel like we're headed for a half year.
Could be.
I mean, look, if Major League Baseball and the players can't figure out how to get on the field next year, then whatever happens to baseball and however they get dragged in the court of public opinion, then they're just bringing it on themselves, because it does not feel like these are insurmountable issues on each side. And I think for a lot of people, Keith, they wonder, all right, what is it that the players want? Evan Trelick of The Athletic was on Mud at Night, and Evan dropped the knowledge on what the players are looking for.
The players want all sorts of changes. They propose certain guys, if you're 5+ years in the majors, getting the free agency. Normally it's 6 years. They proposed allowing guys to get to arbitration after 2 years instead of three. Then there's stuff in the draft they want to change, because tanking's a big concern. You know, in free agency, there's a lot of concern about the middle class. You see all these teams moving toward young players. Why do they go toward young players? Because they're cheap. And so the union, on a bunch of fronts, wants to see MLB essentially give things back and make changes in their direction. And at this point, everything I understand about the proposals doesn't have the owners making any significant concessions. And probably, depending on who you talk to, they would say they're not really making any concessions at all.
Yeah, so if one side's not even willing to negotiate, then how do you possibly get a deal done?
Well, there's the players who are going to lay out, here are the 10 things we want, knowing, all right, we'll get five. We'll get four, maybe five.
You got to kind of prioritize or meet in the middle a little bit. And I do think there are a lot of issues, and we've gone over it all the time. Like, the arbitration thing is insane. Like, to have that much control over a player for so long, that I don't think the owners and the players realize this, or I'm sorry, the owners and like the GMs realize this, but it probably hurts them too, because they end up having to give 10-year deals to guys who are 28 rather than a 10-year deal to a guy who might be 24. It might be good for the whole time, because by the time most of these guys hit free agency, they don't have 10 good years left. And yet they end up having to compete against other teams and, you know, give Corey Seager $325 million, even though, yeah, the last 3 years he's probably not going to be great.
I feel like the arbitration system is something that the owners are never going to cave on. Yeah, I mean,
it's so flawed. Well, because the players aren't going to cave on the guaranteed contracts, which is so good for them.
And then for both of them, that's the cat's ass. Like, that really is the biggest thing. Like, in terms of, and you do make a good point, and that's where owners really should be, you know, kind of controlling their general managers. You know, don't give a guy a 10-year deal. Maybe give him a 7-year deal, but give him a little more money if that's what it takes to get it over the finish line.
So I wonder if they could do that, where you say, all right, we'll give a year or two on the arbitration. You'll hit free agency sooner, but 8 years is now the longest contract that you can actually offer.
Now, that actually is a really good idea, because didn't hockey cap it? Like, I think you can go 7.
Hockey, I think, did. Basketball definitely did.
Basketball
tried to save their GMs in a variety of ways. They stopped letting you draft high school players, so that saved a lot of GMs.
And which then, is apparently coming back.
Which it should come back, but again, it's not back
yet.
Yep,
they had to at the time.
They did. And then, so you can only sign a player from another team for 4 years, and you can only sign your own guy for 5. So if baseball had that, now you can really bid up these guys for whatever you choose to do, 6, 7, 8 years, rather than the 10-year deals, which you could probably count on one hand guys who were good for all 10 years on a 10-year deal.
Yeah, it's tough. Even somebody as talented as Albert Pujols. Like, look at the Angels.
Fell apart at the end. Yeah.
Yep, and they were like, oh, and then he went to the Dodgers and was actually competitive. I mean, he wasn't great. He wasn't vintage Albert Pujols, like, when he signed that contract.
He wasn't $30 million a year, or like some of these guys. Like, Giancarlo Stanton at the end of his career is going to be a mess. But, yeah, those are some of the things that they need to – I do think that, like Bradford mentioned, the competitiveness – is a major issue. We don't talk about it as much. We talk about tanking in basketball a lot because you can see it. The Celtics have been a part of it before. We've talked about it a little bit in football, like when the Colts did it. But in baseball, it is a real problem. And the payoff isn't as quick either, because you get a guy who's not going to be good for you for like 3 or 4 years. And it's terrible. There are a lot of teams that just don't give a crap. And that's why I think a salary floor probably needs to be put in place.
Yeah, I know owners would love – I know in football they put one in, but you had to do it by percentages and that –
Hockey's honestly, got one. And
I think baseball's too dumb. I mean, I hate to say it, but yeah. I don't even know if they could come to an accord amongst themselves, because that's the other dirty part of this too, is that right now it's the owners versus the players. I'm sure there's owners versus owners right now in that room.
Oh, they're
definitely bickering against each other.
Yeah, because they are not all equal. I mean, the fact that Max Scherzer right now makes more than two teams, like, that shouldn't happen.
Than two teams' payrolls, yeah.
The entire payroll. The entire payroll, and he's, like, right in the mix with a couple of others. So that's kind of stupid. Like, and I'm not saying everybody has to spend $100 million or $200 million. Like, not everybody's the Red Sox, Yankees, and Dodgers. But you shouldn't be able to have an entire team make $35 million. You have 25 guys on the active roster, or is it 26 now, and you're going to go with $35, $40 million? That's insane.
And the other thing that Rob Bradford told us that really bothered me was, and he's right, and it's sobering, but we all accepted that we were going to be sitting here on December 1st talking about the impending work stoppage.
Oh, yeah, this isn't a surprise to no one.
It is, it isn't, and it is deflating. Yeah. It is, because you want to get, especially around here, right? Because I know it's been a little bit of the ebb and flow, up and down, good and bad, all that. You're coming off a year where you go to an American League Championship Series. You've maybe resigned yourself as a fan that Heim Bloom is still, well, maybe let's just call it finding his way as general manager in terms of when to spend up. Do you keep doing things like you did in Tampa Bay? But the fact that we knew we were going to get to this point and these people weren't going to agree, it's sobering and it hurts. There is no doubt in my mind that for some people to be like, well, to hell with it. Nope. There's going to be a lot of frustrated baseball fans who are thinking that, you know, you're not going to be able to enjoy your sport this year.
It's probably the worst thing that can happen to any of the sports. And all four of them have either been a part of it to some degree or have flirted with it. Like the NFL got close not too long ago, and Robert Kraft obviously was a big proponent and a big kind of one of the main reasons it got through, evidently.
I saved the day.
He did.
I put on my Superman shirt.
But it affected the NBA pretty bad when they missed a bunch of games, and then they came back, but people were pissed. How about hockey? Like
the year.
A whole year. That, I think, really killed hockey, and they've been playing catch-up ever since. They've changed some of the rules to try to get people back in on it, but that killed them. And now baseball messing around with it yet again. It's really, really bad.
I am with you. We're going to talk about the Patriots and the Bills on Monday Night Football. Tommy Curran will join us next. But right now, it's Shine Time to Trend.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
12:30 straight up. Let's talk some Patriots football with Gretchen Keefe here on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. And know you can listen anywhere you can get an internet connection on the Odyssey app. Joining us now on the Harbor One hotline, it's Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston. He's brought to us by Zuti. Build any app your company needs in a week. Visit Zuti.com for details. And by Dr. Matthew Lopresti at Leonard Hair Transplant Associates, the hair doctor of Tommy Curran at 1-800-GET-HAIR. Tommy, Monday nighter, making us wait an extra day for this game that it feels like we've been waiting for in one way, shape, or form all season long. Tommy Curran, how do you view the Buffalo Bills?
I think they're good. I think they're a good team that is still, you know, it found its identity. It understood who it wanted to be under Sean McDermott. It was a tough team. It was a well-coached team. It was one that wasn't going to back down from the Patriots. And then as our guy Phil Perry has astutely pointed out this year, and as you watch the Buffalo Bills, they've kind of morphed away from being who they appeared to be once they added Stephon Diggs and once Josh Allen became the thrower and the dependable player when he put the ball in the air that he's become. So now they're a little bit more finessey, which is an interesting morph. And that, I think, isn't exactly probably the way that Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll had it drawn up when they took jobs in Western New York.
How do you assess the win over the Titans? Just because no Derrick Henry, no A.J. Brown, no Julio Jones, clearly it's not as big of a test for the defense as it normally would be, but still an impressive, easy victory over a team that's really well coached and going into it was the top seed in the conference.
I guess, you know, as with everybody else, there's all those caveats to attach to it, but week in and week out, while the Bills lose to Jacksonville or Tennessee loses to the Jets and the Dolphins prior to the Patriots, you look at the Patriots and every time they get in with one of these teams that we attach caveats to, they still demolish them. I mean, they won by 23 points. Did they look great? Is 270 yards rushing against you a good thing? Absolutely not. Did Mac Jones have, his almost weekly spurt of two drives where you're like, what's he doing? What's going on there? Yeah, he did. But when the level of play doesn't deviate because the team is so, and this to me, see if you guys agree with this, the level of play doesn't really deviate because they're so good on all three levels, they take advantage. And the beginning of the game was a great example. You get a run game stop, you get a third down sack, you get a punt return mistake by the other team, they punt it again, you get 32 yards, you have a well-engineered drive between performance and scheme, and it's 7-0. And it's just boom, boom, boom. They hit you on all three fronts.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tommy. I know that the phrase complimentary football gets thrown around a lot because you just want your – I think for a lot of fans, the simple answer is, yeah, just go get a quarterback and throw for 350 yards and you'll be fine and okay. When in reality, some of those teams can win, but they're not as consistent. And to me, that's the amazing part of this run that the Patriots are on. And yes, they've caught some breaks along the way in terms of injuries and things like that. But we're seeing – consistent complementary football across the board. Is that the coaching or the Jimmys and the Joes?
I think it's the coaching initially, and then it's the understanding that filters down. And this actually gets to one of those, nits that I like to pick that has become in vogue, which is grading coaches based upon 4th-and-1 decisions that are made relative to down and distance and time in the game. And, I think it was Aaron Schatz, who works his ass off, who works with Football Outsiders. And he said, I'd like to give Bill Belichick a Coach of the Year vote, but he's made so many bad decisions on fourth down this year, I find it hard for me to do that. And again, Aaron works his ass off. He has a lot of numbers that he can present that prove things. But that's where stats and analytics should be reviewed as a tool and not a rule. And that's because if you have a complementary team, if you have a good defense and you're going against an ass quarterback with a group of players who aren't that good, well, then you punt on 4th-and-5 from their 47, maybe, because you're pretty sure that the defense is going to stop Ryan Tannehill or Baker Mayfield or whoever else, because you have a complementary team and then your special teams is going to get it back for you. So long tangent, but it's undervalued, Gresh, just like you were kind of stating.
Now, you ran a Twitter poll for your Quick Slant show. Has Mac Jones gotten too much love for his performance so far? And the three options were, yes, it's been a bit much. The love level is appropriate. And no, he's actually been underrated. I haven't found anybody that's underrated him. But where do you come down on your own question, Tom?
I think it's an appropriate level of love. I think there is a... now that the national media has descended upon Mac like ants on a popsicle stick, we're past that stage. Okay, we're into the comfort stage, and he is still, you know, in the honeymoon with the national media, who is noticing that he's accurate. He makes great reads before the play. He takes care of the ball. All that stuff that we said that he had to do in June, July, and August that he's done, that we've seen. Now the national media is on board too, and the team's 8-4. So I think we're getting some reverb and feedback from our local media, whether it be this station, the other station, television programs that I'm on, where people just recoil at the conversation around Mac Jones and are now trying to zang while everyone else is zinging and saying, well, he's not that good. Is he really that good? I mean, he missed Hunter Henry. Did you see that, everyone? Mm-hmm. Josh Allen does that 4 times a friggin' game. So to me, if you keep it measured and say that he's playing outstanding football for a rookie, but not MVP level football, then I think you're in the safe lane.
Yeah, Tommy, it's interesting because it's almost like we've forgotten that he's a rookie. And Keith and I kind of talked about, you know, if you look at what would be right now the 14 playoff quarterbacks in the AFC, you have Mahomes and then a bunch of guys with a lot of questions. So has Mac Jones elevated the way we should look at him from being a rookie to maybe like a Joe Burrow or someone like that who's a first or a second year player? Has he laid down enough foundation that we can, I don't want to say move the goalposts a little bit, but start to look at him a little differently and say, okay, rookie mistakes are no longer accepted from this guy?
Yeah, I think you can. There are rookie mistakes that are in there to be made, and there may be some of them next week against Buffalo, which is so good on defense and so fast. So there are rookie mistakes yet to be made that we haven't seen yet, but it's too long a level of accuracy and acumen for us to excuse anything like, say, for instance, his first drop back of the season where he pirouetted and threw it backwards. That's never going to happen again.
Right.
I mean, think about that. So you've gotten to that point. You know, you look at a Josh Allen playoff game in 2000, I think it was 19, might have been 18. He's sprinting downfield against Houston. He tries to throw it backwards over his head in the lateral in overtime.
Yeah, that was 19.
That's not going to happen.
That was his first playoff game. Yeah, that was not
great.
So
that stuff's gone.
Yeah.
You know, so you're not going to get a 40-yard run out of Mac, but you're also not going to get absolutely cement-headed decision-making either.
Hypothetical, Tom, Mac Jones for Josh Allen, who says no?
I think I'd... Again, Phil and I spend so much time attached at the hip that I think he might have infected me here, because I was going to say Josh Allen, then I heard Phil saying, no, he's not. No, don't do it. I think I'm going to say Josh Allen.
So you would rather have Josh Allen?
I worded
the question very poorly, so I just wanted to make sure it's clear. Yeah, I'm with you. I'd rather have Josh Allen too, but that's not an insult. I think Josh Allen's one of the five or six best quarterbacks.
Yeah, I would rather try and rein in the wild stallion that is Josh Allen,
right?
And than, you know, rely on. Look, again, a brilliant, incredibly accurate, definitely extremely tough football player who kind of has average velocity, and is always going to have kind of average velocity. We're going to find out, you know, over the next month and a half, whether or not that is an issue when it gets windy and he has to throw some wind cutters, because that to me is the one thing where I look at Mac Jones and say, oh boy, that was up there a long time. Or wow, I thought that throw would have gone in there a little faster. I mean, he's got it. He can throw harder than, you know, most humans, but NFL level, it's just not what I call an electric arm.
What is so special about Josh Allen?
I mean, everything. He's what you would want in a quarterback. He's big. He's strong. He's fast. He proved last year he could be accurate. I think he could do literally everything on the field, and if you coach him up, you see the difference. So I think the question might be, what's not special about Josh Allen?
He's Ben Roethlisberger running a 4.5.
Yeah. Have we ever thought Ben Roethlisberger was great?
Probably, I would hope so.
Probably going to the Hall of Fame.
I mean, he won 2 Super Bowls. What he did in the 2008 Super Bowl was ridiculous. And he's a great example. You talk about a talented player who, by his own way he operates, and it took him a long time for the light to go on in many ways, on and off the field, and the system he was in. I mean, just wander around back there for a while, Ben, and let people hang off you and then throw it to one of those receivers. People are, why are they so good, the receivers? Because they get to jog around for 5 seconds before Ben picks one out.
Tommy Curran, he's with us on the Harbor One Hotline and is with us each and every week. He'll also be with us on NFL Sunday as well. Tommy, thank you, friend. We appreciate it. We'll catch you on Sunday.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Actually, I just screwed up. We don't have an NFL Sunday this Sunday because
make it
it's
Monday.
6 to 8:20 on Monday. Right. That's right. I'm so used to the algorithm of the season. That's
know,
like, okay, here we go on Sunday.
Now there's no Sunday games all of a sudden.
No, that's right. Yeah, what a weird, like, I know we've talked about how the Bruins, it was like, I'll play a game and then take a week off.
Yeah.
And now it goes from Thursday to Sunday to Monday to Saturday back to Sunday again, and I don't think the Jacksonville or Miami games are necessarily going to be flexed, but then again, you never know, right? Like, if the Patriots are, you know, I wonder if they're going to mess around with maybe if the Patriots need a win in the last game of the season to get the number one seed.
Maybe.
Do they mess with that one a little
bit? I feel like the way, without looking at the schedule, wouldn't you guess that the AFC West and AFC North might even have like a play-in game or like a division-winning game? Like, it might come down to that for them over Patriots-Miami. But, yeah, the fact that they didn't move the Titans game, you're like, all right, they're going to probably do something with that Colts game, which they did. So, I don't know, would they put both Bills games in primetime?
I don't think so.
Because now, right? Because Monday night you already got it, so I think they probably wouldn't with Sunday.
Right. It's more of the, and I think you nailed it, is that what is sort of that like playoff landscape with 2 weeks to go?
There's probably a play-in game, and even if it's the crap, like who wins the, well, I guess the NFC East is better this year, but usually there's like, if there's one spot up for grabs, or even if in the NFC, two 500 teams fighting for the wild card, they'd still put that one on.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, like, is it division or seeding for the playoffs?
Yeah.
And of course, the networks get to protect games and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The Boston Celtics are back tonight, but could there be an issue brewing in the locker room? We present the evidence for you to analyze next. Oh, this is great. Huh! Oh, you can't go wrong with this. This gets you going on a Wednesday afternoon, 12:49. Gresham Keefe here with you. Enes Kanter Freedom will make his new name debut tonight as the Celtics are going to host the Philadelphia 76ers. And, Keefe, I know it's been very much talked about. Enes Kanter is an American citizen. Congratulations to him.
Yeah.
But this is where.
Yeah.
Okay. We got a little ickiness here that we're going to talk about. And
yeah,
you have a lot of NBA players who are liberal thinkers. They do not like Fox News, and they do not like some of those people on Fox News. And I know that Enes Kanter comes from a country to where
Enes Kanter Freedom.
Sorry, Enes Freedom.
Thank you.
Should we go there?
Yeah, I mean, Kanter's still like his middle name, but I think you can call him Enes Freedom.
EKF, maybe we can go there.
Good.
So we know that EKF comes from a country where people are oppressed, and he's been very outspoken of that. We also know that we have a lot of people in NBA locker rooms who do not like the way America is being run. So Enes Kanter, new American citizen, went on Fox News and Tucker Carlson and said this.
It seems like people who move here from countries that are not free appreciate the freedoms here much more than a lot of us who grew up with those freedoms. Have you noticed that?
You know, I feel like I'm going to just say this and I'm going to be honest. People should feel really blessed and lucky to be in this, be in America, because, you know, they love the criticize it, but when you live a country like Turkey or you know, China or somewhere else, you will appreciate the freedoms you have here.
Yes,
you know,
that is exactly.
So I feel like they should just they should just keep their mouth shut and stop criticizing the greatest nation in the world, and they should focus on, you know, their freedoms and their human rights and their democracies.
Yeah, see, that part there, like, part of that is great. Part of it, though, he essentially said shut up and dribble to the rest
yes,
of his league.
He did.
Like, that, to me, is rough stuff. And you're right. America, greatest country in the world. And if Enes Kanter's thrilled to be here, Enes Kanter Freedom is thrilled to be here, he is now a citizen. He's changing his name from where he's coming from. It might be like heaven. But talking to some of the other guys in the locker room or talking to some of the other people who have lived here and have still fought many, many battles, and things are by no means perfect.
No.
Just because it's better than where you're coming from doesn't mean, all right, well, there's no more work to do. Like, apparently we're good. Everybody's treated the same. There's no problems. Everybody's fine. You can't go to that extreme. And he would have been fine to say, best country in the world. I think people should be thrilled for the freedoms and should respect that. But to say, stop complaining and do this, like, no, see, that's also a part of America. And I know you haven't been here that long, but that's also a part of it. You are allowed to say how you feel. And especially when you're coming from it from a very educated standpoint. And I know you and I both kind of singling out Jaylen Brown, who when he talks, he is very measured. He's not just shooting from the hip. He is coming based off of facts, based off of experiences and things like that. To have Enes Kanter go on any news station and say that, I think players might be looking at him a little side-eyed today.
And that's what I wonder is, does someone pull him aside and sort of say, hey, man, we love you, we like you here, mm-hmm. but understand my point of view and why you shouldn't say, hey, just shut up and appreciate where you are. And that is this will be interesting from a sort of dynamic standpoint, right? And the reason I bring it up or wanted to talk about this is because we view on the outside that this locker room is not completely simpatico, right?
Yeah, sure.
And that there's issues there. And does something like this, which is real life, turn into, hey, it was a discussion that now turned into an argument, and now you got people flipping each other off. And if you're Ime Udoka, like, I'm trying to think of, Keith, if you're the head coach of the Celtics, right? And today there's discussion of what Enes Kanter said on Fox News. How do you bridge that? How do you discuss that to where you try to get everybody on board? Because Kanter is very much like, this isn't the first time that he's basically said something like that in terms of referencing how great America is compared to Turkey.
No, but what's also frustrating about Enes Kanter is, he's telling everybody else to shut up. And yet when he had an opportunity to go face to face with LeBron James,
good point.
The one who shut up. And I think that's fine, too. If Kanter wants to call out some of the hypocrisy of players in the league that sort of turn they're like, oh yeah, all my shoes and jerseys and hats and stuff are made in China, and I don't really know what's going on in China. If Kanter wants to say, well, if you're really worried about like human rights, aren't you worried about all human rights? And I think that's something. But he had an opportunity to talk to LeBron face to face. He chose not to, and then he's going to go jump on the Tucker Carlson show and talk about how players should just be happy with what, you know, how the country is right now, and you know, don't try to make any changes to it.
Is this just a lack of awareness on his part? Is this stuff that is easily explained away or is discussable, or does this get him shunned by some people?
See, I don't think it'll get him shunned. I bet there's a conversation to be had. I bet Jaylen Brown, and I keep singling him out, but other guys on the team too, I'm sure I could sit down, talk to him, hear both sides of it. Kanter, he has a much, much different experience than everybody else. He could tell him what it was like, you know, where he was from, and then these guys could sort of put back, be like, all right, yeah, there are freedoms here, however, and then get into a much larger conversation. It is also similar, wouldn't you say, to different reasons, but N'Keal Harry, Jake DeBrusk, we talked about, asked mm-hmm. for trades. Enes Kanter might say this. Enes Kanter is not the most important player on this team. He's not the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth player. Like, he is low enough. So even if the guys kind of look at him sideways, I don't know if it's enough to really disrupt the team. And it's not like the team was – everything was going perfect anyway.
Well, there you go. Yeah. There is that element as well. And the Celtics host the 76ers tonight at 7:30 over at TD Garden. We roll into the final hour of Gresh and Keefe. Is Tom Brady the key to the Patriots getting the number one seed in the AFC? We'll get into that next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.